You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 4 October, U.S. unemployment data due, 2:30 our time, expected, no change at 4.2%. I'm Simon Brown, coming into Live and Loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Skull Glow from PSG Old Oak. The Baldwin update, a rough update, but I mean, come on, selling houses in this market, no one should be surprised. And local markets, booming, all the news is good. What is he watching on the risky side that could derail it? Chris Rule from 10X Invest. While they're switching their global equity allocation, and thoughts from me on hedging your stock positions, the what, and perhaps more importantly, the whys, or why not, perhaps. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. JSE springs a record for the September quarter. All share index gained 15% in Q3 to record highs. Business Day, former Steinhoff CFO Ben Lagrange jailed for 5 years, beneficiary of skullduggery, but not the mastermind, according to the courts. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.2%, NASDAQ off 0.05%. Easter's mostly green, Sydney the exception, down 0.33%. Tokyo's up 0.5%, Hong Kong up 2%, and Tencent up 2.4%. Commodities, green. Gold, 2,682. Brent, 77.63. Platinum, 1,014. And palladium, 1,015. The rand is 17.45. Bitcoin, $60,900. Top 40 opening call, 380 points to the green, 0.5% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Skulk Lowe from PSG Old Oak. Skulk, appreciate the early morning. Next, touch on the Baldwin numbers. I suppose in many senses, not a surprise that selling new homes or apartments into this type of economy is going to be really, really tough. And of course, this type of economy is to the period ending August. Rates were still high. Sure, inflation is coming down, but it's been a tough market. And we shouldn't be surprised perhaps by a tough set of numbers, or do we compare them to Calgro and say, hey, Calgro seems to be selling enough?
Hey, good morning, Simon, and good morning to all the listeners. Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, if you listen to what Baldwin said, they contribute this to, you know, quote-unquote, conservative construction approach. I don't really buy into that. I think, you know, personally, you know, when you look at the 6 months, it was a very significant 6 months. You know, you've mentioned the higher, you know, higher interest rates. Definitely not a beautiful period for to be selling homes. We also, you know, in this 6 months, we've had our elections. I mean, when you look at this, yes, now the GNU and everyone is now very, very upbeat about the outcome. But I know that, let's call it that February to May, when we actually had the build up to the elections, there was a bit of let's call it fear mongering going around. So, bottom line, the last year the same period they sold 834 apartments. This year they only sold 640. Yeah, you're talking about HEPS that's going to fall between anything between 54% and 59%. So yes, I do think it's bad numbers. But I contribute this, you know, mostly to high interest rates. And with interest rates moving downwards, I think things will be a little bit better in the next six months.
Yeah, they certainly should be able to sell some extra apartments and pick up the revenue. I want to touch, you and I, we've chatted. You publish out every sort of month end on the Twitter. You go and do a long, I think this time it was 15 charts around the different sort of aspects of local and global markets. We're sitting, I think, number 5 in terms of best returns in dollars. We're ahead of the U.S. I mentioned in the intro, 15% up in Q3, all-time highs. Almost everything seems too perfect. We've got the GNU, we've got electricity, we've got rates coming down, we've got the rand stronger. On the flip side, what's worrying you? What are you keeping an eye on that could derail all this good news? Don't get me wrong, we love the good news, but what could derail?
Yeah. I think that the same things that we're high-fiving each other now, it's the things that's not keeping me awake. I mean, but just sort of keeping me focused. I mean, you started off this podcast this morning reading out the commodity prices that actually are increasing. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at Brent over the last month, close to 7% higher. Natural gas, 31%. You know, when we go down to some of the harder commodities, copper up 10.3%, steel 11%, iron ore 8%. Now, these things are extremely good for South Africa. Naturally, we are a commodity producing country, and one of the major reasons why we've seen a strengthening rand. But always remember, the biggest enemy currently for the world and what we're actually combating is that little thing called inflation. And when we start seeing these 2 days after the U.S. cut their interest rates, China came out with this massive stimulus, and this, I do think, is going to be a bit inflationary. We also know that Israel is not looking too healthy. U.S., they're looking at strikes, heavy strikes at their ports. That could be something that could create a sort of a spanner in the works for this interest rate cut trajectory. It might just be a little bit slower than originally anticipated. That might be a bit risky because we, as South Africa, need the economy to grow. We need unemployment to drop. And for that, I do think we need lower interest rates.
I take your point on it. And we're not talking, I mean, U.S. inflation went to what, 9.1%. We're not going back to those sort of levels. But even just inflation back into the sort of 3-point-something percent is going to give Jerome Powell reason to pause. And then suddenly central bankers, certainly our own central banker, perhaps also reason to pause. And I noted at the last MPC, their target for local inflation next year is only a little bit below 4.5.
Yeah, and we've all said hard and fast. I mean, locally, it's a Reserve Bank now sort of said hard and fast target for inflation, where inflation should be for interest rates to be cut further. Jerome Powell has done exactly the same. And yeah, like you mentioned, these types of movements might just not, I say, stop the interest rate cuts, but might just be a little bit longer period for this let's call it decline.
Yeah, I take that. Inflation, I think that's a fair shot. Let's keep an eye on that. Let's see how it happens. And certainly giant Chinese stimulus packages, that could be inflation. We'll leave it there. Skoklo, PSG, Old Oak, always appreciate the early morning time. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Chris Rule. He's head of client solutions at 10X Investments. Chris, appreciate the time. 10X is looking to essentially switch global equity allocation within funds. Before we get to that, let's do a bit of background to it. I mean, over the last decade, a broad global ETF has done incredibly well in rands. It really has been a place to invest.
No, absolutely. And, you know, in the last 10 years, if you just bought the MSCI World, you've done around 14% annually in rands. And, you know, on a real basis, that's substantially above your long-term historical return expectation you should get from global equity. So it's been a great place to be. There's no doubt. There is no doubt.
I mean, that's almost doubling every 5 years. The problem now is that with the market, I mean, we're sitting here, you know, US markets are doing great, but it's largely driven by the Magnificent Seven, and their PEs have got massively stretched. And even the sort of unmagnificent 493, they're not cheap either. US markets, however you skin it, are just looking expensive. And we've been here before, and that often means that, you know, forward returns are less exciting.
No, totally. And, you know, it's one thing if we look at the forward return expectation or for, you know, elevated valuations. And we know that, you know, as an investor, we need to lower those expectations quite substantially. In fact, we've got developed markets return expectations at 1% real when, you know, long-term average should be more like 5-6. That's a valuation story. But if you think about portfolio construction and the reality that this very diversified global basket is not so diversified anymore. In fact, relatively highly concentrated. You know, US equities alone has about 37% in seven companies, and that's that Magnificent Seven you just referred to. You know, the ACWI, which is both developed markets and emerging markets, you know, and US equities only a component of that. If you look at the top 10 holdings there, it's up at 22%. So, you know, that is extremely concentrated relative to anything, you know, that we've seen in recent history. And yes, absolutely. That's been driven by this kind of spectacular run in US equities and concentrated around technology, advertising, you know, and more recently, semiconductor industry, which has kind of blown up off the back of AI expectations and how AI is going to fundamentally change everything we do. So we find ourselves with exceptionally high valuations on these companies, which means in order for an investor to receive the commensurate return, we need perfection out of those companies in terms of growth expectation, in terms of general broad economic expectations. And we don't necessarily think that that's a high probability investment.
Yeah. So the switch you're making is from that broad sort of market cap global ETF. You're looking at the 10X S&P Global Dividend Aristocrats ETF. I remember when you and then your colleague at the time, Gareth Stobie, launched this ETF, and it's not focusing on high dividend yield. It's focusing on dividend as a sort of token of quality. If you've got a history of paying dividends consistently, that's a good sign for a business.
Absolutely. And, you know, the reality is that these quality companies, these kind of dividend payers and companies with consumer staple kind of underpins and sound balance sheets, they have been completely out of vogue in global equities for the last decade. Even I would go as far as to say, you know, post GFC, there was what was termed a flight to quality and a hunt for yield. Quality companies rallied. But since then, they really have been unloved on a relative basis if we look at global equities. And all of the capital has flown into these large tech-based companies. So we look at it in two ways. Yes, there's an allocation to what we see as quality companies with very strong fundamental underpins that are well diversified away from basically advertising revenue, AI, and the semiconductor industry. And also the construction of the portfolio itself is equally weighted in the main part. And so you've got a substantially lower concentration risk around your top holdings.
It's less US, which is not the worst thing in the world right now, because I mean, I remember back in the day when in a broad global market cap ETF, US was around 55. It's now, I think, north of 65. So it's less US and also a bunch less tech, which is exactly those sort of caution hotspots you've been mentioning.
Absolutely. So we see it as a way to protect investors and get back to a closer return expectation that we would expect from global equities, closer to that 5-6% real over the long term. Mm-hmm. And that's based off fundamentals evaluation and also in the context of the potential of an economic slowdown with some of the economic data that's coming out at the moment and the expectation that the economy simply cannot run as hot as it has in the last 10 years. This kind of flight and this move to quality should provide a strong underpin to produce equity-like returns with a much lower level of risk and a much higher probability than investing into a concentrated basket of securities.
And what's important here is some of the listeners might be thinking, oh, I'm giving up upside. But in truth, the earnings of that Dividend Aristocrat ETF has actually outperformed the S&P over the last decade, which says a huge amount around A, the quality, and B, the frothiness in S&P.
Yeah, there's a total fundamental sort of disconnect there. You know, earnings and price should essentially track each other over the long term if we look at the equities. And that just simply hasn't been the case. But it all comes down to this incredible multiple expansion in those seven shares. You know, those multiples up at 30 of the Magnificent Seven as a price earnings multiple. If you look at the long-term average of that exact basket, it's more like 20. And then if you look at the long-term average of the S&P, it's more like 15. So that demand has really meant that investors have paid up and paid high valuations for those seven shares. And at the same time, you've got this large basket, well-diversified companies in the US who've grown their dividends and have never missed a dividend growth in absolute terms over a period of 25 years. And they're trading at multiples of half. So we think that's an attractive value proposition at the moment.
Yeah, 100%. Last question. There are going to be some clients with 10X investments out there who got maybe living annuities, maybe retirement products with yourselves. I mean, for them, this is just going to be a seamless process happening in the background.
Yeah, so this is the house view that we've been expressing in our multi-asset solution. So in particular, you know, our large flagship is our future fund. So this happens in the background. This is done through the lens of our, you know, our outcomes-based objective and, you know, the risk management process that sits inside of our investment process. And so that's a seamless process. We, of course, have the levers for other investors to use this. So we've got the Global Dividend Aristocrats ETF, which trades on screen. Investors can access that. That now has about $3.5 billion of assets in it. So it has been well received by the market. And certainly we've seen allocators start to increase their allocation to that. So those are kind of the mechanisms that you can access this equity view through at the moment.
We'll leave it there. Chris Rue, Head of Client Solutions, 10X Investments. Appreciate the time. And that's our poll today. Are you shifting away from the less tech and US-heavy global ETFs? I mean, the data is simple. After the outsized returns, your future returns are expected to be lower. And we've seen it before. The first decade of the century, 2000 to 2010, the US markets, S&P, returned zero. Absolutely zero. Could it happen again? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
So I've had a couple of folks speak to me in the last few days or maybe the last few weeks around. They want to hedge positions. So what is hedging? Hedging is the idea that you own a share, as an example, and you are worried that it is at elevated levels. But you don't want to sell the share because you like the business. You don't want to pay tax on the profits that you've made. So you do a hedge. Essentially, using derivatives, you would lock in that price. So say the share is 100 Rand, and you use that hedge. And if it falls to 90 Rand, you've lost 10 Rand on the share. That's just the normal part of markets working. But you've made 10 Rand on that hedge. So the share fallen 10 Rand or 10%, but actually you're in exactly the same position. And the reason why we're getting a lot of talk around this, or more talk around it, is markets are at record highs. As I've mentioned a couple of times in the show, 15% up in that third quarter. I think we're the fourth or fifth best market in US dollars globally, even ahead of US markets. The problem with the hedge is, why are you doing it? Sure, you might be worried. Sure, markets might be coming lower. But if you love the stock, it's going to go down. There's a cost to a hedge. You don't put that on for free. So you've made 10 Rand, but you've got to pay some fees around that. You've probably had to use a derivative. And of course, you've made some money, and therefore SARS wants a cut of that as well. Flip side, what happens if the price continues higher? What if instead of it going from 100 to 90 Rand, it goes from 100 to 110 Rand? You've now made 10 Rand on the share, but your hedge has lost you 10 Rand. So you're locking in the price right now and giving up any upside. So there are a couple of issues. Firstly, are you able to time that to perfection? The answer is no. You might get it slightly right, but you have no chance of getting it perfectly right. And the second point is, so what? As a long-term investor, we accept that shares go up and down, and that over the long term they go up, but over the short term it's messy. Even a bull market, as we're seeing right now locally and many global indices, it's not one red traffic from bottom left to top right of the chart. Pullbacks are part of that story. A 10% pullback is absolutely par for the course. We could see our top 40, currently 78,000-odd. It could drop sub 70,000 and we would still be in bull market. So my advice is, this whole idea of hedging in your long-term portfolio, ignore it. Just sit back, enjoy the bull market, and let the profits roll in slowly over time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Edward Stack from the World Platinum Investment Council. They're expecting platinum deficits over the next few years. Quick fun fact, Costco has been selling $200 million of gold coins and bars a month more recently, and they've now introduced a platinum coin at the same time. I don't think it's going to get quite the same excitement. But we asked you, does this expected deficit from the World Platinum Investment Council, should it push the white metal higher? Over half of you said, yeah, absolutely, things should be going up. A third said, you know what, we need more demand coming through. And the rest said, nope, we have seen this before. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday, the PwC SA Mine Report.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.